It's 11:07. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. And again, thank you for tuning in to the KPCW Park City Mayoral Forum. I'm here along with station manager Renee Bodley. And again, as a reminder, your mail-in ballot will be sent out next Tuesday, October 17th, and you'll have until Monday, November 6th to mail it back in. Or you can find one of those ballot drop boxes and drop it off on Election Day the 7th. We've asked our two mayoral candidates to come prepared with opening statements, and we have prepared a couple of questions for each of the candidates. We're really hoping you, though, that our listeners have a bunch of questions. So, again, that number to call in just a few minutes will be 435-655-8255. Again, we drew numbers out of a hat to begin, and that's you, Dana Williams.
Good morning, and thank you for having us. As I approach my 40th year of living in Park City, I must admit I have never been more proud of our community, what's going on, things that have been happening. As a farmer in Eastern Summit County, the first decade, and a little bar owner on Main Street, I was very involved in creation of the third generation of Williams family that was has lived in Park City. And during the 90s, the activism in our community that created the four big topics that are now both the focus of local and county government, growth, environmental issues, open space, and housing, very proud of the input that created this new paradigm in how we operate as a community. I had been started a small business when I left office, a handyman company, and have been very busy doing that. And last year, I think kind of the beginning was the veil issue, started getting me to the point where I was reading, reviewing, looking at council agendas, following what's happening in the news, and got to the point where I felt I wanted to participate again. I thought I was done. I thought it would be great to just play music and be a handyman. And I got to the point where I kind of felt like I wanted to step up and be part of the process again. So that's the reason for running.
Okay. Andy Bierman.
Okay. Well, good morning, and thanks for having us here, and thanks to everybody for tuning in. I arrived in Park City in 1995 in my VW van to take a job at White Pine Touring. Did whatever it took for a couple of years to get established in town and eventually bought my own business. I was an employee at the Treasure Mountain Inn and was able to buy in and start my own business there. Did that for almost 20 years, but about 10 years ago, I became concerned about the course of the community, was starting to get vocal about it, and decided I didn't have a right to complain unless I got involved. So I got involved, and that eventually led me to city council. I was elected to my first term in 2011, and I'm currently serving my second term. I'm running for mayor now to make sure that we maintain our focus and momentum on building community. There are a lot of challenges facing the town right now. For over 20 years, we've had an economic boom, and that has begun to erode our community. And we're seeing that every day in terms of traffic, affordable housing, lack of workforce, growing social disparity, and environmental degradation of our town. And those are things that if we don't get in front of, we're going to lose who we are. We're going to lose the authentic town that we need to be. And I believe the only way we can offset that is strengthening our community. And fortunately, we have great alignment right now between our community, our city council, our city staff, and our regional partners. And we are starting to address these with our critical priorities. I think we're on the right track, and we're making a difference with transportation and housing and energy. And I want to see those continue forward. I have the tools and the skills to maintain that momentum, and I believe I have enough vision and have heard from the public that I can chart a proactive course going forward. So that's why I'm hoping to have the opportunity to serve as our next mayor.
435-655-8255. Part of this whole mail-in balloting has kind of really just created weirdness, I think, in the whole thing. But part of that is that your financial disclosure forms aren't due. I mean, we don't know how much money you've raised and spent before we actually get to cast a ballot. So let's start with you, Dana. We looked at a mayor's race, and you correct me if I'm wrong, Andy, approaching $50,000 in 2015. Dana, how much have you raised? And tell us about your three largest contributors.
I think ballpark, I haven't had an accounting since the primary, but ballpark, we're probably in the 30-some-odd range right now. And most of that has been donations through Jesse Shetler and his restaurant group. There's probably a half a dozen $1,000 donations and several small ones. So that's pretty much it.
Okay, Andy?
Yeah, right now I think at my latest count I was about $31,000 in cash and probably $3,000 to $5,000 in trade. That's come from, I believe, about 50 or 60 donors. I'd have to go back and look. My two largest donors, I believe, are Dick Roth and Hank Lewis. I'd have to double check that, but I got significant contributions from both of them. And Dick is somebody I worked on a climate change nonprofit with, which eventually morphed into Summit Community Power Works. And Hank is a friend and somebody that I talked to about the campaign and has been very supportive. And then there are a lot of donations in between there. One thing I'd like to say is I am more than happy to make a release of my disclosure at any point if the media would like to see that. We don't have to wait till the deadline. So all it would take is a request, and I'll make that available to the public.
Danny, you would do the same?
Of course. Yeah.
Right.
And just as a follow-up, in 2002 when I first ran, I think it was $52,000 that we raised for that campaign.
Oh, so I was thinking last year or last time was like the largest ever, but maybe not.
Mm-mm.
That was against Fred Jones?
Yes.
Again, we want our listeners to call in questions for Andy Bierman and Dana Williams, the candidates for Park City Mayor. The number is 435-655-8255. Andy, you mentioned that you really have a focus on this momentum of building community, and part of that is affordable housing. And the city has a plan to build 800 affordable housing units.
Yeah, we have a goal to build 800 affordable housing units. I would say our plan right now gets us about to 150, and we have got some our short-term goal by 2020 is 220 units. We just built our first 19 and had a lottery on those last month, and those should be available in December of this year. Next year, we're going to probably have another 20 or so units come on, and then the following year, we've got anywhere from 50 to 100, depending on whether we can currently do the Woodside project and the Bonanza Park project. All in all, right now we've got the funding and the land and the plans pretty firm for 130 to 150 units in the next 3 years. And then we have some ideas for the remaining units to hit our short-term goal. But ultimately, if we want to keep 15% of our workforce living and working in town, that's anybody from, you know, basic frontline employees to middle class. We need to hit these numbers. We're losing our workforce out of town. Right now, only 15% of the people working here live here, and we want to maintain it at 15%. We're not trying to accommodate everybody.
And Dana, what do you think of the city's goal for affordable housing?
I think we need to actually kind of look at the greater area. All the projects that are happening right now, the Lower Park Ave RDA, all started when I was still in office. So those two particular projects, the one that was just completed and auctioned, started about 5 years ago. I think we've got to take a big look at the whole area because we have 1,000 units coming in at the Canyons. We have several hundred units coming in at Silver Creek. And I think that there are cyclically we look at different things. When we looked at Park City Heights, we had done a study, found out that what we were the shortest on was middle class housing, and so we were trying to create a project that would hit more of that middle class number because we were missing it. And then we've had the differences between what we need for the J1s, what we need for the seasonal employees as compared to the year round whole ownership rentals or seasonal rentals. And I think we've got to take a big look at that whole mix of what we've got. And I don't necessarily think I agree with Andy that we have to look at these partnerships in terms of Summit County and Wasatch County on where we're going. But I'm also concerned about how much is actually on the books, and is it time to take a 10,000-foot view of all of those together?
Can I expand upon that a little bit? Because I think Dan brought up some good points. So we really have two challenges here. Our housing challenge, there's a couple of reasons we want to do that. There's practical reasons to reduce traffic. There's the moral reasons that some of our teachers and police ought to be able to live in town. But there's also the thought that as a community, we need to replenish the well occasionally. And so that's why we're focused primarily on housing for young families right now, is to bring – these families cannot possibly afford to live in town right now. right now. And if we don't have some young families moving here, we're not going to have any volunteers in the future. We're not going to have people willing to serve in office, and we're going to become a very one-dimensional community. So we do need to focus on housing for the young families and for the seniors. But there's also a regional aspect to this, which is very true, and that becomes a transportation problem. There are a lot of housing opportunities in the surrounding areas in the county, and we're trying to aggressively address that by enhancing that transportation so people that need or want to live outside of Park City have better opportunities to get into town.
But by building 800 units in Park City, haven't we just invited 800 new vehicles into town?
Potentially, yes, but I think we're losing people from town. The trend is all towards second homes and rentals. We have, the last decade, we grew by almost 50%, and we didn't add any residents to town. So I believe we're going to continue to see people leave town, our residents, and one of the only ways we're going to be able to keep them in town is through these affordable housing projects.
The need that I see, and I'm just following all of the, like the Park City Forum and stuff, it's rental housing. It's for people that are coming into the area to work for the winter. Yet Park City is building, you know, family housing and for sale housing. What about the rental market? Why aren't we just building, you know, tall apartment buildings?
There are needs all across the spectrum right now. We have desperate needs among young families, seniors. We have needs for rental housing for our millennials in our workforce. So we're working on projects for all of those right now. We had to triage, and we felt that young families were the first priority, seniors were the second, and rentals are something we're aggressively working on as well. We're looking at pieces of property we can build on to do that. But one of the things I think we have to be real careful is neighborhood compatibility. There's talk about going high or going dense, reducing setbacks, that sort of thing to maximize our number of rentals. That polarizes a neighborhood, and that turns the neighborhood against the affordable housing. So I think we have to be very careful what we build and make sure that's compatible with our town, even if that means we might not maximize how many units we're building. And then lastly, I think there should be more of a burden on our resorts and our major hotels and businesses in town. They need to step up and do this affordable housing for their employees and a lot of these rentals. And we're certainly a willing partner, but we'd like to see them take more of a lead in that.
So you mentioned Wasatch County, Summit County, and all the plans to build out there. And we heard that with the city council candidates that we just had in here. And they're talking about the hundreds of units they're building in Wasatch County, right along 248, right along Jordanelle and the Browns Canyon entrance. How important is regional collaboration, and what plans do you have to do better, greater work with Wasatch County, Heber City, and the Wasatch Front? Dana?
Well, let me clarify one thing about the seniors housing, because it has been a big issue. But the seniors, as far as my discussions with them has, and I think you'll probably agree, Andy, has been much more, we don't necessarily need affordable housing. We need housing that we can move into now that our kids have left and we need to be in smaller spaces. So I think they're kind of a different, more specialized group. You know, the concept of trying to work with Summit County, we have a great track record. So, Wasatch County, I know that they're concerned about us because they don't necessarily want to have to grow to supply our workforce. You know, I remember years ago when we wanted to do a non-binding agreement to talk to each other, and they voted it down 4-1. And so I want to also be really careful in terms of trying to push ourselves onto the outlying areas, that we have to be respectful that those unique communities want to participate with things. I think transit was one thing with Wasatch County that weren't really that interested in having the buses come there as compared to Camas and Summit County. So I think it's got to be done in a very diplomatic way that is respectful of the uniqueness of their counties and realizing it's not their obligation to house our workforce.
If they didn't want to work with you then, why would they want to work with you now?
Because I think to a certain extent there is, the following year, Wasatch County did approve that. That we let it be their idea, and then we said how progressive we thought they were. I think the dialogue is really good. We've the manager, county manager, we've all known for quite some time. I think there's a very good dialogue now with them. But again, I think the respectfulness of their individual communities and that we're not pushing ourselves on them is super important.
Those residents that are out there, Randy, who are going to be living out on 248 around the Jordan Hill area, those are residents who are going to be using Park City's infrastructure. So how do you approach Wasatch County with that issue?
Well, back to the broad question about regional relationships, I just got to say I think they're absolutely critical. There's not a significant challenge Park City's facing right now that stops at the White Barn. These are regional problems. This council and I have placed a real priority on strengthening our relationship with Summit County, with Wasatch County, and with the Wasatch Front, and even out to the state, because we need broad solutions for a lot of these challenges, and we need good partners. And Wasatch County has been one of the difficult groups to deal with. They are concerned about the cultural impacts that Park City is having upon their community. And we have been working through that. We've been meeting with them. We've been finding points in common that we can work on. One in particular was Bonanza Flat. That was something that had the potential to be very controversial, and instead, we worked together closely, and they were extremely supportive, and we continue to work with both them and their residents on that. And so I hope we can make that a great example of collaboration and build from there. Jordan Hill is something we're very concerned about. I was proud to be part of an open space purchase that protected that I-40 corridor going up to the county line from the film studio to make sure that sprawl doesn't come over the ridge. They're going to be working closely with Deer Valley on that whole project. They're a part developer, and I think that might be our common ground that we can sort of use the good relationship we both have with the resort to build upon that. But we need to be prepared and have effective transit that will help those people coming into town get to Park City, because I think they're going to want to use our services. They're going to want to recreate here, and that's going to put a ton of pressure on us.
You're listening to a live candidate forum with the mayoral candidates Dana Williams and Andy Bierman. I'm Leslie Thatcher along with Renee Bodley. We'd like your phone calls at 435-655-8255. We'll be right back.
United Concerts, a KPCW supporter, presents Alison Krauss and David Gray live on October 14th at USANA Amphitheater. Tickets on sale now at all SmithTix locations, smithtix.com, or by phone at 801-467-TIXX.
Spend the day outdoors at Utah Olympic Park. Save when you buy a Gold Pass. Valid for unlimited day use of the zip lines, adventure courses, and much more. Activities are open Saturday and Sunday, 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. until October 22nd. Details at UtahOlympicLegacy.org.
Utah Olympic Park is a nonprofit organization dedicated to providing winter sport and recreation opportunities, and a KPCW supporter.
Hi, this is Carla Lehigh, designer at Elliott Work Group and longtime KPCW listener. Our design team offers complete architectural, interior, planning, and sustainable design services for historic, commercial, hospitality, affordable housing, and sports projects throughout Park City and the Mountain West. ElliottWorkGroup.com.
It's 11:24. Again, you're listening to the mayor candidates for Park City Mayor, Andy Bierman and Dana Williams. I'm Leslie Thatcher along with Renee Bodley, looking for your calls of your questions at 435-655-8255. Until we get somebody on the phone, we'll just keep asking questions. We're good at that. Guys, I have seen a handful of social media posts titled Fake News. Andy Bierman, you're for putting a road on the rail trail. Dana Williams, you need a job. So I want to hear from both of you. First, Andy, what is your position on the future of the rail trail?
Well, I do not support putting a road on the rail trail. I want to begin there and be very clear. That's not something I would ever support, nor do I think there's support by the rest of council or the mayor to do that. That is being included in the environmental assessment of the entire corridor to look at the improvements to 248. And I think it is important we look at the whole corridor and what the impacts could be, because we are hoping to put in park and rides out there. We may expand the road to make space for a bus lane. And the rail trail, there may be some use on that for our e-bike programs for people to commute into town. So we may want some funding to improve the trail and fix the bridges and that sort of stuff. So it makes sense to include it. But I want to make it utterly clear to the community, there is no support among council for putting a roadway there.
Okay. And Dana, what's your thought about the future of the rail trail? You live real close to it.
I do. And I actually was the one who walked with a bag of grass seed when we first got it and walked from here to Quinn's spreading it. That was really disconcerting to watch the shark circle during this Facebook thread, because neither myself or anyone in my camp made that comment about Andy supporting that in. Somebody brought it up, and then all of a sudden, oh, I'm so disappointed. Oh, I'm all this. And the thing is the original point was inaccurate and wasn't said. And people jumped on this, and to be honest, Andy, I mean, I'm disappointed you keep this on your Facebook page, because it literally didn't happen. And so while I was being accused of Dana spreading fake news, the actual fake news came from the person who originally wrote it, and then all the people who chimed in on, oh, how disappointing, how much he's changed, everything else. So it's frustrating, no two ways about it, because you have a choice of either not doing anything, which then leaves the potential presence of people thinking that out there, or you get into it, and then it just becomes it goes out of control. So I never said that Andy was supportive of the route, neither did anyone on my committee. In terms of my work,
I want to ask that later. So I want to know what you think about the future of the rail trail, though.
I had hoped, personally, in terms of the study of the corridor, that the council and mayor had said, I'm sorry, the rail trail cannot be part of the study. We won't even consider looking at options on there. I get concerned that maybe not this council, but sometime in the future, if there's a study that says this is appropriate, at some point people will be willing to look at it, as compared to saying flat out, no, we can't put that in. So can I answer the second part, though?
Sure.
Okay.
So that the more fake news now is that you need a job, and
right.
You have two. You told us you're a handyman. You're also a member of a band. So where's that coming from?
I have no idea. I started this company when I left office, and I've jokingly told people I needed to work with inanimate objects for a while, and laying tile and doing construction's been great. I actually make more money at that job than I would if I'm reelected. So I think that these are emotional. There's no two ways about it. And I think both Andy and I have supporters that are getting very riled up about certain things, want to see more friction. And so it's basically it's just inaccurate information.
So, Andy, I mean, where is that coming from? I mean, is it coming from your camp?
That Dana
needs a job?
No. I actually haven't seen that on social media, and I just have to comment that post was not my post or from my committee. That was I think I shared or liked it, so it's probably showing up on my page. But I don't believe it actually had accusations that was coming from Dana or your committee in there. I'd have to go back and look at it. It just talked about I learned in my past elections that if you don't get out in front of these rumors, they tend to take root. So it's important to address those and be very clear. And social media is one of those mediums by which you can address them. But Dana, can I ask you a follow-up to the rail trail? So in 2007, there was a study done while you were mayor that did include the rail trail on there. And as you know, to get federal funding, they insist on these comprehensive studies. So when you say you would have preferred council not include it, does that mean you would rather forego the federal funding to not include the rail trail?
Not necessarily, Andy. I think what my fear is that sometimes when things come back and they say, gosh, you can alleviate so much of your problems by using this, by using the rail trail, that it could start to gain momentum. And again, I mean, I think all of you guys, and I'm very clear with this, that all of you went on the record saying we would never consider this. But what I get afraid of is that people that come in down the road see that as an option, and that's something so near and dear to, and especially those of us that live in Prospector and utilize that trail all the time, don't want to see it. But I basically think we're in agreement that we don't want to see anything on the rail trail ever.
That we agree on.
So he's got two jobs, Andy. Do you have a second job in addition to your taxpayer supported job here?
I actually sold the operations side of Treasure Mountain Inn on May 1. Thea and I guess, retired from the operations side. We are still property owners there. We still manage commercial spaces. But it's a much smaller job than it was. We're not on call 24/7. We're not servicing large conferences and groups. So it's freed up a tremendous amount of time. And Thea tells me that's quite fun. But I started campaigning pretty much the next day. So I have not experienced that yet. But really, I hit a point in my life. I've really dove into council, dedicated an incredible amount of time to it. It basically made it a full-time job. And so knowing that the mayor's role would be even larger, I had to free up some space. And that was part of the decision why I sold my business when I did.
Keith, we're going to get to you in just a second. But Dana, so do you give up, if elected, do you give up one of your two jobs?
I would never give up playing music. It's just not an option. But And we have to see on timing. I think as Andy was just referring to, the time requirement of being in local government, I saw how that changed from, you know, when I first started, it was about 17 grand a year. And yet it seemed like it was a full-time job. And so at that time, I was juggling three. So I'm going to have to see in terms of going in what the time is. My commitment is that if it is full-time and I can't be doing other things, that I would certainly stop.
Okay, we're going to take a call from Keith. You're on the air, Keith.
Yes, thank you for taking my question. And I hate to revisit the affordable housing question because you've moved on to a couple other topics.
That's okay.
However, I find that we have plenty of money in the budget to pay our teachers, firefighters, and policemen adequately, i.e. our first responders. But at what point do I have to subsidize Park City maids, you know, the people that work at Vail employees? They can certainly afford to employ their workers and give them a higher wage. And I feel that I'm being taken advantage of. And I have a not-in-my-backyard attitude. So I'd like to ask your candidates, which one of you are not going to push this affordable housing down the constituents' throats? I'll take my answer off the air, please. Thank you.
Yeah, appreciate you holding on. Andy, do you want to start with that? You're pushing it. You're going to push it down his throat here.
I am going to continue to support a certain degree of affordable housing in town. I do think it's essential for our community building. There is a priority that's placed on essential service workers, which is teachers, cops, emergency services, government employees, nonprofit folks. They all get a priority. And when you look at the recent lottery where 19 homes were awarded, I think the first two went to seniors and all the rest went to essential service workers. So I don't think we are providing housing specifically for employees of our corporations in town. We are trying to provide it for people to give back to the community. But I do think it is essential we continue to build housing and we do it in a way that's compatible with our community.
Right. So the distinction he made was with the resort companies that have a lot of money. But what about the small business owner on Main Street? He needs kitchen help, staff. Different maybe than the Lyft employee, Dana? Is there a distinction between those two?
There definitely is. And I get concerned when we keep talking about housing for what is considered essential workers, and that's not maids, and that's not Lyfties, and that's not waiters in restaurants, because to a certain extent, without them, we're out of business. And so I think they are essential employees. And I think I'll have to go against our caller here in terms of I think the one thing that makes us who we are is this socioeconomic diversity and the fact that the guy who's helping someone on a lift in the morning is probably having a beer with them later in the day, and they're from such different socioeconomic levels. You know, we're somewhere between 25 and 30% Latino now. We have a 300 to 500 member Filipino community. Those all, and we have the J1s that come here every year. Those all make us who we are, and it's part of the fundamental fabric of the community. And so I think we do need to keep working in terms of trying to make sure that we maintain socioeconomic diversity here. And that means that, yes, we have to participate in it.
Well, and not to set aside Vail Resorts, but, I mean, they're the only ones we can look at because they're a publicly traded company. They're making record earnings. I mean, so is it just that they're going to have to just figure it out, or you're saying we need to provide housing for their
They've also announced 1,000 units at the Canyons that they're looking at building, and then we, you know, there is a master plan that's approved for the parking lots at PCMR, which will certainly get tweaked with a new owner, but I would imagine there'll be a relatively substantial housing component with that also.
Can I address, this has come up over and over through these discussions about this 1,000 units at the Canyons, which is great. And
it's 500 units, 1,000 beds. We should
Okay.
Clear about that.
Thanks for the clarification. But again, we keep pointing to this as it's going to give us all this housing. What's not being pointed out is they are building 4 million square feet of commercial space, and they're going to create far more jobs than those beds provide. And that's what we found is development does not pay its way in terms of employees. You look at something like the St. Regis, we got two affordable units for that. They probably have a staff of 400 people. And that's the only reason the city is even getting involved in this and the county gets involved is because development, even with the requirements or extractions we make on them for their projects, it only satisfies a small portion of the workforce and leaves a tremendous number of people driving into town and living outside of our community.
Well, and that was something I brought up with the city council candidates. I mean, it's a need for not necessarily year-round full-time people. It's a need for people who come in during the busiest seasons of the year. Why isn't that we're just building, a high-rise apartment building and calling it good? Dana?
Okay. over the years, there's been several projects that have come in that were, I would say, between 300,000 and 600,000 units that were put on the border of town or in the junction, that's where we were going to put those people. And I am definitely afraid of that type of activity. The Silver Creek project is looking at putting all of the affordable component into one area so it doesn't affect their more expensive property. I think we've been really successful in trying to create areas in town where we could do smaller projects where people become parts of communities, whether it was the Line condo, what's happening on Lower Park Ave, Snow Creek. And so, to a certain extent, I think we've got to be careful. And I think I'm very concerned about height ordinances because that seems to be the big argument in terms of, well, let's just get rid of these so that we can accommodate all this. I don't think that's the answer.
Andy, your response?
Yeah.
I just want to preface that by saying, we're spending millions of dollars. And again, we're building units again for year-round full-time people. I mean, that's the idea?
Yeah. If you look at our inventory in town right now, we have 500 units and 400 of those are rentals. And as I said before, we have needs all across the spectrum. We should be building rental units, senior housing, middle-class housing, young family housing, all of it at the same time. But we can't do that. We don't have the funding. We don't have the land. We don't have the ability. So we're playing triage at this point. However, the city is actively looking at several opportunities for rental projects. And I will return to the fact that I think they need to be compatible with their neighborhoods. They should not be isolated. They should not be tall. They should not be something that sets our workforce apart from the rest of our community. We need to find better ways to integrate it like we used to when you'd have 8 ski bums in a house in your neighborhood.
Have a few of those in our neighborhood. Yeah. One thing I could add to, years ago, right across from where White Pine currently is, Mark Fisher had done these efficiency units that were upstairs in that project. And they were great for seasonal employees. And certainly we can add more of those because we still have 2,000 to 3,000 J1s that are coming, although that might be changed here based on the new administration, what they're saying about J1s. But those type of things, I think, have to be in the mix also.
Okay, we got to move off of affordable housing. We're not coming back to it. It's no secret, Dana, that you do not support some city staff members. If elected, what kind of chaos are you going to create in City Hall? Are you going to be a disruptor to what's happening?
I don't think I agree with the preface of that, the premise of that statement. I've heard the disruptor term quite a few times, and yet my history. If stepping up to against Vail was being disruptive, yes, I was. If standing up for the LGBTQ community several years ago when it wasn't necessarily politically correct is disruptive, yes, I am. But to a certain extent, when I took office in 2002, the beginning of that, I came into what I would consider a much more hostile situation than this is. I totally think that regardless of outcome, or if I actually am get through this campaign and win, the first priority on all of our parts will to be to try to coalesce. So I think I had a history of that through 12 years of being in office, and I think I'd be able to do it again.
I'll be more specific with you, Dana. You did not support the hiring of City Manager Diane Foster. So if elected, could you work together?
Yeah, of course. And I was not happy with process and the way that happened. One of the things I never thought would happen in terms of my participation in government was that I'd become a policy wonk. And I did. Do I have differences of opinion? Is there differences of style? Of course. But I think that all of us also have the opinion that there's a greater good here that we need to achieve, and it would be my goal to do that.
And you announced your candidacy before Jack Thomas announced he was not going to seek re-election. You supported Jack when he first ran for mayor. Mm-hmm. Why that timing? Why didn't you wait to see what Jack was going to do?
Because I already knew what he was going to do.
He had told you he would not run for re-election.
Yes.
And it feels like your candidacy is an effort to do a track correction in City Hall. Can you tell us some things that you specifically don't like what you're seeing and what you'd like to change?
Sure. And I'm not sure track correction is the right word. My goal is that someone who has made their whole life here, married here, raised their children here, that there is a, you know, my family has become part of the fabric that we're very proud of our tenure in town. So in terms of course correction, there are a few things that I am concerned about in our rush to achieve certain goals, that the unintended consequence of some of those actions, I think, are falling on the wrong people. For example, we don't want employees to park up here anymore. We're going to shuttle them. We add another half hour to hour to their day to achieve a certain goal when actually it is so hard. I don't know one restaurant that was able to stay fully staffed last year. So now we're going to charge so much to be down here that the employees aren't going to park here. So the onus of creating less cars is on the working class. When we bought the Arts and Culture District, we created the first ever transient room tax in the city. We had the county and the state at the time. Lodging community was not brought into the discussion. They weren't notified for somewhere around 6 weeks after the decision was made. Anyone who was booked after January 1st, the lodging companies now have to go back and raise their fees. So I get concerned about the unintended consequences of certain actions, and I think I have enough history to be prepared for that.
Well, Andy, let's bring you into this. I'm guessing you have a lot of support from city staff because you are status quo. So, I mean, I'm guessing if elected, do we expect more of the same and some of the issues that he brought up, like the Arts and Culture District without talking to the lodging community? Like the micro transit, you know, that it was like people felt like it came from nowhere.
Okay. I would like to I'm going to address the Arts and Culture District first because I don't think that is a fair characterization of that. That moved very quickly. We had had on and off conversations with the Kimball Arts Center for several months, and they had other offers to move, and they were running out of time. We had approached Sundance to see if they were interested, and there was a lack of interest there. That suddenly turned a corner. The mayor spoke with their board. They saw the vision to that, and things moved very quickly. And within 2 weeks of us having any sort of agreement that this went from being a dream that was way out there to being a possible reality, we started involving the Lodging Association. And I personally participated in multiple meetings with them trying to address their concerns around the TRT. It is unfortunate we didn't have more time to have the discussion with them because of the timing that we needed to get the bond moving forward, to have the funding come in place for next year so we could move forward with the capital improvements there and the purchase of the property, as well as the commitments that Kimball and Sundance needed to make their decisions. It was a short timeline, but the Lodging Association was very involved, had multiple meetings, and we were able to accommodate a lot of their needs. And I don't think it's inappropriate that we're using the TRT tax for this, but keeping Sundance in town is the single biggest benefit to the Lodging Association. I believe we were on track to lose Sundance eventually, that they had outgrown this town, and locking them into a long-term home here is a far better benefit to the lodging properties in town than this tax. And this tax is not a tax they have to absorb. When you book, there is always a clause in there that it's subject to what the current taxes are. So this is something their customers will pay, and it's going to be a minor change in pricing for any of their customers. I don't see it having any significant impact. That being said, it was not ideal. We would much prefer a situation where we had a longer window to talk with those guys. But there were conversations, and we did scramble to make it happen. As far as you were asking about status quo, I don't think it's been status quo up at the city. In terms of this council in the last 2 years has really felt a sense of urgency, a desire to stop studying and to move things forward. And we have probably remanded more things and objected to staff recommendations more times than the 4 years I served prior or any council I've ever seen. We are pushing very hard. And I do think the staff are starting to find that as exciting, though. They're seeing us making progress. Things like the electric buses, they were incredibly skeptical over. There was no desire to move forward. Council forced that point. We got a wonderful federal grant, and now those things they're working tremendous. And we have transit districts from all over the country coming to look at this. And staff is starting to see the benefit of us taking some risks and doing some things to address these critical needs.
Back, this kind of popped into my head as we were talking about the Arts and Culture District. Of course, the City Council holding a public hearing day to issue that $40 million in sales tax revenue bonds to buy the $20 million piece of property for the Arts and Culture District. Four years ago when you ran in the mayor's race, Mark Fisher, the property owner of Bonanza Park, was one of your supporters. And when I look back in the last 2 years, Park City has paid Mark Fisher $40-50 million for property. Is that okay, given that he was such a supporter of yours?
To call him such a supporter, I mean, I had hundreds of supporters, and I'm not sure if I took any money from Mark. If I did, it was a small donation. And I know he let me put a sign up at his house, and he let me put a sign up at Bonanza. But I have to refute. There's always this characterization that I'm friendly with developers. I'm friendly with everybody in town. That's why I'm running for mayor. I get along with everybody. It's kind of a prerequisite. So to single out one person, I don't think is fair. This decision is not made by me alone. We have a council. We have a mayor. And I think if I recuse myself from any purchase or any agreement that was with somebody that's allowed me to have a yard sign, I would be out of chambers the entire time. So I don't think Mark has received any special treatment. I was not in directly on those negotiations regarding price on this, and I still think it's the right thing to do for the community, and it's a much better solution than what was going to go in there, which was a big box commercial and a hotel and things that really were not compatible with our community. I think in the end, this Arts and Culture District is going to be a huge benefit.
655-8255. You got a few more minutes if you'd like to ask one of the mayoral candidates your question again.
Can I add something to that too? Because to a certain extent, I am personally not against the Arts and Culture District. What my concern was is that when a plan comes in and is going through process, the fact that it did not ever get to go through process, and the idea that this plan was so bad that we needed to step up and do this. I think it would have gotten absolutely ripped apart in Planning Commission. It was too high. It was too boxy. There was too much big box in there. And I've been very supportive always of public-private partnerships. And if we wanted to protect Sundance and the Kimball Arts Center in terms of giving them a home, I think that could have possibly been done without spending $20 million.
I'm kind of surprised we haven't gotten questions about parking. It's such a hot deal in Park City. And you were talking about employee parking and how the current administration wants to make employees pay and how current Old Town businesses couldn't hire people. What is your solution for parking in Park City, Dana?
I do think it's an ongoing issue. And as someone who, lived here when the three-legged one-eyed dog could sleep on Main Street all day and not have to worry about a car, to this point where it's almost like we're Southern California at times, I realize how difficult it is. We saw how well satellite lots worked around the city during the Olympics. We did build China Bridge for two more levels. And I think the easiest people to socially engineer in Park City are those that visit us. If they're staying in lodging, you can take shuttles, you can take mass transit. When the parking study started, I went to two of the meetings and was listening to folks, and someone said, well, can we add the China Bridge? We don't know. We are the consultant on this project. Why wouldn't you know? And I said, I'm sorry, but I know we can add a couple more levels to that. I'm concerned that in the rush to try to get certain accomplishments on green efforts, when they fall on the backs of the people who can least afford to participate in it, that's hurtful. So personally, I would have rather have seen that we took at least one level with it. Part of the overall parking program, we at least looked at the potential of China Bridge being expanded going on from there.
Andy, you want to respond to that?
Yeah, I've been working on Main Street since 1995 with various businesses and also lived on Park Avenue. So parking has always been a great controversy, and there isn't a great solution. But what I believe is we're not going to build our way out of this. We neither have the funding nor the space. If we widen our roads or increase our parking, we're just going to amplify our problem, which is single occupancy vehicles. We've got 1,000 workers trying to drive to Main Street on the average day and 1,300 parking spaces, which leave no spaces for our customers trying to come to the street. I do agree with Dana that our first priority needs to be getting our tourists out of the cars. They're the easiest ones to do that, and that's something we've been very focused on, and I think there's a lot more we could do, particularly working with the chamber and our businesses. But we've got to address this with our workforce. And there are a lot of benefits to them. There is going to be free parking to the day during the daytime. There is going to be a shuttle lot where they can park for free and regular shuttles. The city is making a big investment, taking the money from this parking program and reinvesting this to make it as easy, as safe, and as cheap as possible for our employees. And really, it just has to be as we amplify our transit system to provide opportunities. If we don't provide some disincentives, they're going to continue to drive their cars, and then no one's going to be able to get to Main Street, and the problem's not going to solve itself.
The shuttle lot, though, we're talking maybe 1-2 year solution. Then what? Because, I mean, that's pretty, I agree, that's pretty nice. 10 minutes to, you know, you can check email or whatever. It's not going to be that big of a deal. But if we're going to send them out of town to Richardson Flat, that's a whole different story.
You're going
to
see some radical changes in the next 2 years in terms of there will be a new transit center in Bonanza Park, which will act as a hub to all these areas with connections. We're not sure what they're going to look like, but new connections to the resorts and the commercial core. And you're going to see extensive park and rides and rapid bus routes at both Kimball and Quinn. So I think we're going to be looking at a different model. But there is absolutely no way we would do away with that lot and that solution without having a good alternative for our employees. They are critical to this town. And it's incumbent upon us to take care of them.
Dana, any response? We're trying to get somebody on the air here, so.
Yeah, I had already talked about it.
Okay. 655-8255. Really, you've got about 5 minutes before we're going to wrap things up here and give them closing statements. We're talking to the two candidates running for Park City Mayor, Andy Bierman and Dana Williams. And if you've got a question, we'd like to hear from you. Again, let's talk a little bit more. Right now, we're just going to put the caller on the air because we keep dropping them. Never mind. Let's talk a little more about that arts and culture district. Part of it is a 60,000 to 90,000 square foot building that Park City Municipal is going to build. We have heard from people saying that it's going to be, you know, maybe the new place for Anaya's Market or maybe a gas station where we're displacing Maverick. Kind of things that people rely on. Then we've also heard about, artist space, you know, talk about allowing, you know, starting artists to have a small studio. But I guess when you hear that, I mean, what would you say to the Ron Butkoviches and Bambi Knights of the world?
It's a great question. And I'd like to point out that we're going to be spending the next year having a public process discussing what we want this arts and culture district to look like. The three things that we know are going to happen is Sundance will have a headquarters there, Kimball will have a headquarters there, and we're going to put a transit center there. We'd like to accomplish some housing. We'd like to create some spaces for our nonprofits, and we'd like to create potentially a space for Anaya's and maybe some of the other businesses that want to stay. I think the city's going to be very careful not to directly compete with Main Street or our commercial galleries. What we'd like to do there are things that we're unable to do elsewhere in town, whether that might be an artist in residence kind of scenario. But again, we're tonight is on the council agenda to approve hiring a group that is going to head up our public engagement on this. And I think for the next year, the community is going to get to weigh in, and we're going to listen to that, and the community is going to shape what this district ultimately looks like, not us.
We're going to put Kitty on the line. Kitty, what's your question?
Question is, there will be a lot of discussions on ways to improve traffic coming in on 248. In the meantime, this ski season, could you have traffic cones making it two lanes in and one lane out, and then switch it to two lanes using traffic cones, two lanes out and one lane in?
I think that's the Hawaii model, right?
Well, or Beijing or any other major place. I've seen that with 12-lane highways in China, that it would be 8 in the morning and 7 in at night. It would change because it was lit. That's actually been looked at. That was done in the study when Park City Heights was being looked at. We do know that we have the room, given the current configuration, for three lanes to be full-time coming in and out of town. And I don't think the idea is a bad idea to look at 2 in the morning and 1. But we also have those choke points along there in terms of the school, the crosswalk at the school. The tunnel that was put in years ago I think is great for the residents of Prospector. But then, you know, you come another quarter of a mile west and you hit that choke point. And so I think her idea has some validity.
It's a good idea, and it very well might be one of the ideas that come out of the study we just initiated. The problem is it's a UDOT road. They aren't going to make changes like that without reviewing it and studying it first. So that's what we're looking at right now. In 2019, you might see that or some other solutions. But Dana hit it right in that whatever we do, we have to also address the choke point. We have to probably take more of that pedestrian traffic and put it walkers, put them underground. We got to address the school traffic with maybe a frontage road. There might be a place for a roundabout at Kearns and Bonanza, but we really have to figure out how we're going to address those choke points. Otherwise, we're just going to move the traffic jam a little closer into town and still have it.
Well, we're just talking traffic cones. You just can't do it and ask forgiveness later. No, not a good idea. Yeah. Okay, we got just a couple of minutes here. We're going to run through a real quick round of a lightning question. Do you support hosting another Winter Olympics in Utah and Park City?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. And during the last election, we've heard a lot about losing our middle class. Dana, have city leaders done anything to retain it?
It's difficult because Park City Heights is really still just coming online. And I've been trying to find out, and I don't have enough information to be an expert on this, but there's been complete mission creep in terms of middle class housing. No, I don't think it's being addressed.
Andy?
I do believe we're beginning to address it. It's something that we've got a lot of work to do. We continue to lose a lot of our middle class out of town. But part of it is housing, but there's other affordability issues. Child care needs to be addressed. Transit needs to be addressed. Our utilities need to be kept lower. I mean, we're hitting people on a lot of fronts. It's pushing them out of town. I also think we have to do a better job of managing our intensity around town. And event fatigue is a very real issue for a lot of our residents. And we're trying to do a much better job of mitigating events so it's not so impactful on our neighborhoods. So we are making progress, but there's a lot of work to be done.
Okay. Yes or no? Do we pay our elected officials enough? Dana, I know something you worked on.
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. We're going to leave it at that. Let's see. Starting with you with a closing statement. 30 seconds, please.
Okay. Thank you. From 2002 to 2014, it was my great honor and privilege to serve this community. I noticed after several years of being gone that I missed public service. I missed the dialogue. I missed the banter. And so I decided to throw my hat back in the ring, and I would appreciate your vote and your support. Thanks.
Andy Bierman?
Well, it's been a great honor to serve on City Council the past 6 years, and I'm proud of what we've gotten done. There's a lot of work to do, and I would like to see that through. I think it's important as mayor that you not only set the tone, but you also set the agenda, and you have a vision that meets our community needs. I've demonstrated the skills to do that. I believe I have a proactive approach, both looking towards the future while accomplishing what we need in the present. I've made space in my life for the mayor's role to be my sole focus, and I hope to give Park City everything I have. I'd like to be your next mayor.
Okay. Well, we're really lucky to have two smart, competent, passionate men. So thanks for your time this morning, and thanks for, trying to serve Park City.